Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Athletic.
The Champions League is back, and to be fair, so is the Europa League, Man United fans, which means there's no better time to sign up for all the unrivaled coverage at The Athletic. Right now, new subscribers can get a half-price annual subscription that works out less than £1 a week for an entire year. All you have to do is head to theathletic.com/totally. But hurry, you've only got until the 25th of February. That's theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show European Edition. Today, Atleti, PSG, Bayern. What made the big names tumble? Milan derby. Romelu doing his talking on the pitch, making Zlatan his Ibrahim a bitch. But can anything stop Inter? And Champions League and Europa League. Midweek fixtures previewed. And will Unai Emery's Villarreal be the only Spanish side to qualify? We'll have all of that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. All right then. Hey, listener. You're back with us on this 23rd of February, or possibly after. That's your prerogative. With me here today, I have James Horncastle.
Hello.
Julien Laurence.
Bonjour, James.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, James. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Alvaro. You sound excited, and so am I, because there's nothing more thrilling than the days leading up to new Champions League ties. Woo! Hey, last week we got a new Ronaldo and a new Messi. What do you think Uncle Gazprom will bring us this week?
A big upset this week. Big upset.
Do you think? What's it going to be, Jules?
Atalanta are going to beat Real Madrid. That's the big upset.
I thought you were going to say Lazio against Bayern.
If you hadn't interrupted me, I was about to say, but Horncastle is, you know, it never changes. I wouldn't have passed it past Lazio to beat Bayern as well. That's it. That's me done.
Everyone beats Bayern these days, as Rafa will be telling us very shortly. What do you think the biggest surprise of last week was? Was it Dortmund's performance at Sevilla? Was it RB Leipzig's collapse against Liverpool? Or was it that PSG result? Raf.
Well, for me, James, it was Dortmund actually turning up and playing a composed, balanced football game, which is not something we've seen very often. Against Sevilla side that looked brilliant before that game, Dortmund made them look very, very ordinary. And to me, it came as a huge surprise. I think Dortmund players surprised themselves just how good they were. Of course, there was shades of the old Dortmund towards the end when they kind of were hanging on. But by and large, it was very impressive. And of course, they followed that up with a 4-0 win against Schalke in the Bundesliga. So really good week for them.
Mm. Fantastic goal from Haaland. I'm sure you're going to be telling us about that very, very shortly. Jules, you had a pretty special midweek, didn't you? And then highs and lows of PSG. You got the kind of the other side of it on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. Great win against Barcelona. Away as well on Tuesday night, with a fantastic Kylian Mbappe and the hat-trick and everything else that followed. And then very disappointing performance against Monaco on Sunday night, losing at home 2-0 in a game where they really never got going, PSG. Marco Verratti was a little bit injured, so he's still on the bench, and he's certainly not the same team when he's in there. There was no creative midfielder. There was no momentum. They conceded a goal early, and that was it. But yeah, very different from Pochettino from one game to the other, for sure.
Mm. Alvaro, have you got a surprise that you think is going to happen this week? Could be in the Europa League.
It could be in Europa League, yes. If Granada beats Napoli, that's going to be a surprise anyway, or if Granada knocks out Napoli. But I think that what Jules was saying is kind of reasonable. I mean, if you check Real Madrid match day squad to play against Atalanta, I was trying to sort out any sort of lineup from it. And it's not very convincing. They will probably play with Vinicius, Asensio and Mariano Diaz up front against Atalanta. That's no joke. I mean, if you go to Bergamo and you play there, you better bring your A game, and Real Madrid doesn't have it now.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, we'll get a fat preview on that fixture very, very shortly. Let's get on to this week's stuff, though, and begin with the always concise and time-specific moment of the weekend with Paddy Power. Alvaro, you lead us off.
The moment of the weekend for me was Atletico de Madrid losing at home against Levante, because that opens up the title race a little bit again. Real Madrid is only 3 points away from Atletico. Barcelona is still over there with reasonable chances of catching up with the top of the table. But I think that Cárdenas, the goalkeeper of Levante, was fantastic. He denied everyone, Joao Félix especially, on a bad day for Atletico de Madrid. So yeah, the news is that the title race is spurred on again in Spain, and this is very good.
High Liga.
High Liga, yes.
Mm, very nice. Jules, what about you?
It has to be Monaco winning at the Parc des Princes, of course. And as the joke went by last night, well, the last few days in France, the Parc des Princes of Monaco, of course. And it was pretty impressive the way Niko Kovac set up the team, the way they played, the way they executed the plan. Sofiane Diop scored really early, which I think helped them. And Axel Disasi was amazing on Kylian Mbappe, marking him, almost man-marking. And it was really good for Monaco, who did a double on PSG this season.
Mm, just 2 points behind the Parisians now in what is a very open Liga title race. A Rafa, high Bundesliga.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have the same ring to it and could be a little bit could be liable to be misunderstood, James. So I'm not going to repeat that. But yes.
What is that? Misunderstood for what?
What does it mean?
I don't know. It just doesn't quite sound right to my sensibilities. But yes, there is a title race. As incongruous as that might sound, Bayern lost against Frankfurt and Leipzig won against Hertha. So the deficit is only a mere 2 points between first and second. And Bayern and Leipzig still have to play each other in about five weeks' time. So out of nowhere, a real title race.
Wow. Meanwhile, we might have seen somebody taking a decisive step towards this year's Scudetto in Italy, James.
Yeah, to be honest, I mean, there's still much of the second half of the season to be played, but Inter, they won the derby against Milan. They were very convincing, even though Samir Handanovic had to make a couple of very big saves at the start of the second half. But 4 points in front of their Cugini, their rivals. They came out of that game also 11 points ahead of Juventus, who have a couple of games in hand. But at this rate, it's very difficult to see Inter being caught, even though they remain quintessentially Inter in that they slip up in winnable games. But they've got all week to prepare for these games now. Rest, recover, game plan. And we all know how Conte makes treasure out of not being in any other competitions other than the league. They're out of the cup, they're out of Europe. It really feels like it's Inter's Scudetto to lose now.
Mm. All right. Much more on all those stories to come as we get underway with this Totally Football Show European Edition.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Puede marcar el segundo Levante. El golpeo. Gol, 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 gol,
Yes, listener, that's the sound of Atletico getting beaten this weekend for only the second time in La Liga this season. They lost 2-0 to Levante. They are, of course, Atletico facing Chelsea this Tuesday evening. First off, Levante, though, they've now won away at Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid in the space of a month, and they also drew at home with Atleti last week. Alvaro, who are these guys?
Well, and they are in the cup semi-finals. So let's see what they do in the second leg of the cup semi-final against Athletic Club, because they got a draw at San Mamés. So yeah, Levante are a good team this season. They have had a long project under this manager Paco, who happens to be a manager who does a lot of micromanagement. I recommend everyone to watch the documentary on La Liga in Amazon because it delves into Levante and it's very interesting to see the way he works, Paco. And then they've got quality players there. I mean, Enis Vardy, the North Macedonian international player, he's one of the best set-piece takers in La Liga. Morales, el comandante, at the age of 33, he's turning 34 this year. He's one of those players that, when he is inspired, is capable of giving a torrid time to the best defenders as well. And then a number of players that are on board there, like, for example, De Frutos or Roger Martí, they are having a really good season going forward. So, yeah, this Levante team is no surprise to anybody. There has been a gradual improvement, but beating Atlético de Madrid and especially getting 4 points of Atlético de Madrid in the last 5 days is something very impressive, no matter how good Levante are.
De Frutos almost scoring from the halfway line as well late on in this.
Yes, exactly, because Jan Oblak went for a header in the last minutes of the game, and De Frutos found an open target and he scored the goal. And Simeone was not that sad or that angry this time after being beaten by Levante, because Atletico did everything they could to score. It was just not the day. Joao Felix missed a lot of chances. The injuries are piling up for Atletico de Madrid, and this is getting quite annoying for Simeone, because he has to change his system, and more importantly, he has to take out from their preferred positions to some key players. For example, Marcos Llorente is probably the best attacking midfielder now in La Liga in terms of statistics, and he has to play where Kieran Trippier plays, because Trippier is still suspended. Same thing happens on the left. Yannick Carrasco, the Belgian player, who was phenomenal, for example, back in November against Barcelona, he is not ready to play against Chelsea, and this affects the whole team structure, because some good players, they have to be deployed into those wide positions, and the team suddenly loses consistency in the middle, especially in the backbone. And that's the reason why Atletico is conceding so many goals lately.
Mm. 7 games without a clean sheet now for Diego Simeone's side. They've only had 1 win in the last 4 in La Liga. Are they going to blow this title, Alvaro? What's your feeling? 3 clear of Real Madrid. They do have a game in hand.
I know.
They've got the derby coming up, not this weekend, the weekend after. Crikey, what do you think?
Yeah, it's difficult to guess this one. Look, I thought that Atletico de Madrid could administer their advantage much better. They had a good margin, and now it's going to be all down to the head-to-head encounters, which is something that Simeone and Atletico could have not desired. I still believe that Atletico is the favorite because, you know, you can still expect the best from some players like Joao Felix or Luis Suarez, or even Yannick Carrasco or Kieran Trippier when they come back. Atletico is basically holding to their thin squad right now, and I can expect important players to come back in the near future, and that's going to be a booster for Atletico. So I still think that Atletico is the main candidate to win the title, but of course, a month ago it looked like it was an 80% yes, Atletico was going to be the title, and it doesn't look like this anymore.
All right, okay. They did have Moussa Dembele making his debut this weekend. It'd be interesting to see if he in any way features in the clash Tuesday night against Chelsea in Bucharest. Real Madrid, as we mentioned, 3 points behind Atleti now. Barcelona only creeping 1 point closer because they also blew their fixture at home to Cadiz. A 1-1 draw. It hurts more than the defeat to PSG, said Ronald Koeman afterwards.
Yeah, he said that he was more disappointed, even more disappointed than against PSG. Look, I think that there is an acceptance right now at Barcelona that the club is very ill in every possible department. There is no president. There will be elections in a month's time. The squad has promising young players and veteran players who don't make the difference in the big games. We saw that against PSG again. And I think that this is everything that Barcelona can give at the minute. But you expect them to beat Cádiz. They couldn't score the second goal. And that was something that affected Barcelona, because Cádiz during the game, they didn't do much. I mean, they had only a 20% possession. But yeah, one ball was sent to Barcelona's box pretty much nearing the end of the game. Clement Lenglet, the Frenchman, did a silly penalty. Actually, this is not the best season of Lenglet at all. And yeah, Cádiz scored the equalizer, which, by the way, was the first penalty that Cádiz had taken this season. So yes, it was a very disappointing result for Barcelona, because if they beat Cádiz, they could have been like Real Madrid, only 3 points away from Atlético de Madrid, with Atlético with a game in hand. And now it looks like they have lost the chance to put themselves up there with the best.
Atletico Madrid against Chelsea in Bucharest. Who's got Atleti for this? Who's got Chelsea? Jules?
I've got a good draw for the first leg, which I think would be a good result for Chelsea. But I think that tactically and with the players missing Atleti, it's a good opportunity for Tuchel and Chelsea to do something very interesting there. So I think Chelsea will get something out of this game.
Okay. Rafa?
Yeah, I agree. I saw actually Atletico play Levante and I was not impressed on Saturday at all. I thought they were very, very underwhelming, both defensively and in attack. So I think Chelsea can really expose them.
James?
Yeah, I'm quite curious, actually. I think, you know, one of the aspects that we've seen Tuchel bring to this Chelsea side is that with the exception of the weekend against Southampton, they've been pretty hard to break down, pretty hard to score against. So I think it'll be a pretty tight game, first leg. I'm maybe not expecting a good draw in the same way that that Julien is. I think it'll be a bit of a grind. I think one for one Michael Cox will no doubt enjoy writing about for this site on when is it? Wednesday morning or whatever.
Mm. Sort of game the commentators will be describing as fascinating. neighbours Real Madrid are also in Champions League action this week. On Wednesday, as mentioned, they visit Atalanta. We'll be hitting that sweet, sweet bit of action next.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Woof. Atalanta against Real Madrid on Wednesday. It's the first meeting between these two sides, and of course it is, because where would they have met before now? Atalanta, while Real Madrid were beating Real Valladolid this weekend, were having something a little bit more spectacular, weren't they, James?
Yeah, they absolutely thumped Napoli in the second half. I mean, that's not difficult these days. Napoli are in crisis. Alvaro alluded to it in that defeat to Granada. We'll have to see whether Reno Gattuso lasts much longer because it certainly feels like something's broken there. But, you know, Atalanta, four different goal scorers. It feels like they're going into this game in exactly the kind of form that they need to be in order to get a result. You know, we saw in the group stages they were capable of going to Liverpool and winning at Anfield, capable of going to Ajax and winning at Amsterdam.
Mm. Also capable of losing at home to Liverpool 5-0. So.
Yes, but that was the turning point of the season in many respects, because it kind of precipitated the fallout between Gasperini and Papu Gomez. I mean, that Gasperini made the decision that, you know, they couldn't play like they had done before. They needed some more ballast in midfield. They had to be a bit more robust. They couldn't carry Papu. And, you know, that led to the altercation at halftime in the Midtjylland game. And since then, they've really kind of, on the whole, they've tightened things up. Yeah, there are the odd games where they have, you know, like the Torino game, where they were, 3-0 up and then ended up drawing 3-3, where they were still playing maybe with their heads on the cup, I think. It was the Coppa Italia midweek, because they're in the cup final for the second time in 3 years. But I do feel like they're going into this game in great form. I mean, Luis Muriel has gone from, you know, a player who'd come off the bench and score to starting for them. He scored in 9 consecutive starts for them. And this all-Colombian front two that they've got of him and Duvan. I mean, Muriel is scoring goals, the like of which, yeah, the difficulty rating is so high, and yet he keeps doing it. It's not a kind of flash in the pan. He was rampant in this win against Napoli. I mean, he had a goal, an assist, and if you like these kind of things, a couple of pre-assists as well. Mm. And when you look at Madrid's problems, as Alvaro said, no Ramos. I think Benzema is going to forfeit this game as well.
Benzema is out of the list as well.
Yeah, so it's another great chance for Atalanta to really do something. So, you know, I'm actually quite confident. I mean, I don't think there's a player in Europe who has a better goal per minute ratio than Muriel this season. I think it's 1 every 53 minutes. Look out, because Gasp and his team, yeah, his bomb squad, are coming again to trap one of Europe's greats.
Jens, I think it's worth telling you what's going to be Real Madrid's lineup, just to for you to see how needed they are. I mean, Thibaut Courtois, Lucas Vázquez, Nacho, Varane, Ferland Mendy, Kroos, Casemiro, Modric, Asensio, Vinicius, Mariano. On the bench, there is only one player from the that you would know of. It's Isco. The rest of the guys are from the second team. So this is the way Real Madrid will land at Bergamo to play this game against Atalanta.
How big a defeat do you think Real Madrid can get away with in this first leg and still come out of this? Or what do Atalanta need to do while they got Real apparently at their mercy?
Well, I think that it would be very important to keep Real Madrid from scoring. I mean, that could be fantastic for Atalanta. And actually, Real Madrid, they could be dangerous now in the set pieces because Casemiro is hunting one or two balls in the air. Varane can do that as well, but they are not a menacing scoring force at the minute, and especially not without Karim Benzema. So whatever involves Real Madrid not scoring, I think that it will be a very good result for Atalanta, because we know that Atalanta at Valdebebas in Madrid, they're going to attack as well. Their mindset is not going to change. Mm.
Stopping Real Madrid from scoring might be a bit of an issue because Atalanta don't really do clean sheets. And generally speaking, are they actually, the Bergamaschi, are they actually exactly the kind of opposition that a Zidane in some difficulty might enjoy playing because they're so open?
Perhaps. I do think Atalanta have learnt how to kind of close games out and shut teams down better. I mean, Matteo Pessina, for example, who's really come in for Papu, who's shown himself able to score goals, but also just add that little bit more steel to that midfield of Remo Freuler and Martin De Roon. De Roon, who's really tactically disciplined. But I do think, you are right. I mean, what Alvaro said about Atalanta's mentality and how, not un-Italian it is, but yeah, they won't really make all that many compromises on how they play. You know, they always want to score. It doesn't matter where they go, they want to win. And that means they will take risks that I would say maybe Antonio Conte wouldn't take, or Andrea Pirlo wouldn't take. And that has been rewarded in them going further in cup competitions, not only abroad, but in the Coppa Italia as well. So I think, I mean, this has everything to be the best game of this midweek. Even a debilitated Real Madrid, I think, will see their opportunities to score some goals. And their weaknesses will allow Atalanta. I think Atalanta will look at it and think, we have to go for it. We have to take advantage of the fact that Madrid have so many players out, which should be amazing. I'm really looking forward to it.
Only just to complete something on Real Madrid, there is something about them that reveals itself very rarely lately, but at the same time, it's in them. I mean, when Real Madrid gets in a professional mode, they are very, very, very difficult to break down. And that happened from June until July last season. They won the league like that, and they have done it this season occasionally. I mean, they have prevented Sevilla from beating them. They have prevented Atletico from beating them. Same thing with Barcelona. So I know that going forward, Real Madrid are going to suffer this time because they don't have any top category scorer right now. But at the same time, there are a few players in there like Varane, Casemiro, Modric and Toni Kroos, a historic midfield line for Real Madrid that they know how to do in this game. So I think that in the interest of Real Madrid, the best thing that can happen to them is that they control the game a little bit more than opponents do against Atalanta. If they control the game, I think that they have a chance. Because Real Madrid, when they control it, they know how to rest with the ball, which is something that Barcelona doesn't know how to do right now, ironically. But Real Madrid don't know how to do that.
Interesting. All right, well, that's coming up on Wednesday. Just a quick mention for Zielinski's goal from Atalanta's match at the weekend, the 4-2 win there at the Gewiss Stadium.
Attenzione, Napolitano che imbuca Zielinski con il destro! Ma che gol ha fatto Zielinski! Il pareggio del Napoli, meraviglioso!
Oh, Jules, you're nodding. Would you like to describe it for the listener?
Yes, he's got his back to goal and there's a ball coming over and he just let the ball coming down and on the turn he volleys it, which is harder to do than the Lewandowski goal that we saw last weekend where he chested it first and then volley on the turn, which is easier to do because the ball obviously slows down than if you just let it go and volley. So Zielinski, deserves, I think, a lot of praise for that. What wonderful goal, but pointless in the end because they still lost the game. But that was a very special goal.
Very special. Was it more special than Haaland's goal for Dortmund, Rafa?
Ooh.
There was a better goalkeeper in goal, that's for sure.
Oh, I don't think anything beats Haaland's goal from this weekend.
Oh, come on.
The artistry, the execution.
Sabitzer is a better goal than Haaland. Sabitzer is 100% better goal this weekend than Haaland.
Jetzt versucht's mal. Sabitzer ist plötzlich drin. Traumtor. Traum des Monats aus 88 Metern oder so. Ich weiß nicht, wie weit es war.
Sabitzer is nice, but how many of those actually go in? Like a shot
from
35
Lange,
meters?
What is Lange doing in goal? The ball bounces off like on the line near him. I mean, it takes forever to go down. I mean...
Jules, remind me of the Sabitzer goal.
It's a strike from 30 yards, like a thunder strike. I still
think but anyone can hit them, Jules. Even I've scored goals like that. I just, you know, you just hit and hope. I mean, with Haaland,
You haven't. I'm just saying that... Haaland volley... Haaland volley is great, but it's not top corner. It's nothing. The ball is almost in the middle of the goal and the goalkeeper is taking for a long time to react. That's what I'm saying. But it's a great goal from Haaland. I prefer Sabitzer personally.
Pretty good goals in the Milan derby at San Siro, of course. We'll be hearing about that very, very shortly. But next up, time to put on your most concerned face, listener, as we ask, what's up with Bayern Munich?
Oh, mate, keep going. We're almost there.
Oh, the legs have gone. Pressing is hard. The weather is so mentally fatigued.
All right, lads. Already on the way down, are you? How was your view from the top?
Liverpool might have peaked under Klopp, but at Paddy Power, if things aren't going your way, we'll give you your money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold acca lets you down. Paddy Power.
Max free bet £10, min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive excludes shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Bayern beaten this weekend 2-1 at Eintracht Frankfurt. Eintracht Frankfurt, who are now 11 Bundesliga games unbeaten, who won this one without the services of André Silva, who is the league's second top scorer behind Lewandowski. How do you say second top scorer, Raf, in the Bundesliga?
Second top scorer?
Yeah.
Is it like Vice? It'll be like Vice Kapokalanier.
Vize Torschützenkönig.
There you go. That's what
Vize Torschützenkönig.
Okay. Listener Ryan Clayton says, a word from Rafa on Frankfurt's amazing form of late. Any standout players from the squad who might be touted for a big move in the summer? Also, Tony Robertson says, will Eintracht Frankfurt make the Champions League places at the end of the season? What are the key reasons they're doing so well this season?
Ooh, all of this in one word, that's gonna be tricky.
Well, no, those were two different questions. But you take as many words as you like, Rafa. It is an athletic podcast, after all.
standout players, I mean, the way they're playing at the moment, you can go through the entire team and think they're pretty outstanding. I guess Filip Kostic is probably the most talented players there. He's sort of a number 10, can also play on the wing. Since Luka Jovic has returned from Real Madrid, he's gone to another level. He's been playing really, really well. But also André Silva up front. I mean, he scores a lot of goals. He wasn't available for the game on Saturday with the back injury. But he's been wonderful. And there's a whole raft of clubs now interested in him. Really elegant sort of number nine that can play a little bit as well on the ground. So, yeah. But it's the team. It's the ethos. It's the way that they press together under Adi Hütter, and they play with sort of real personality and muscle. Really good team to watch.
And do you reckon they'll hang on to that top four spot for the rest of the season?
I'd like to think so. I mean, Dortmund are coming back strongly, and I think there's still a chance that Dortmund might catch them. Leverkusen are a little bit inconsistent, as they often are. So I think at least one of the two spots between Bayern and Leipzig, or Leipzig and Bayern, will be available. And then I think Frankfurt and Wolfsburg have a great chance of both making it. I still think Dortmund will sneak in. So one of the two will be able to hold on. I reckon.
Okay, Leverkusen currently 5 points behind, or off the top four, and Dortmund a point further away. As for Bayern Munich, as you mentioned before, Rafa, their lead has been cut to just 2 points over RB Leipzig. Leipzig, who had a 3-0 win away at Hertha Berlin. That's their fourth victory in a row in the league. Bayern, meantime, since coming back from Doha, haven't looked like quite the same thing, Raf.
No, I mean, even before going to Doha, Bayern have been sloppy and a little bit out of sorts, and they often start games very slowly. They were down against Bielefeld 2-0, then they came back from that game but drew it 3-3. Against Frankfurt, the same story. They were down 2-0. They could have drawn 2-2, maybe even won the game, but you cannot give the opposition a head start all the time. And just a combination of errors, of injuries, Bayern are not quite the same team. And going into the game against Lazio, you wonder, you know, if this is one of those occasions where once the floodlights go on, we see Bayern focus and play very differently. But at least in terms of personnel, you know, there's a chance that they might not be able to, because there's no Müller, there's no Gnabry at the moment, there's no Douglas Costa. So they're a little, especially up front, they're a little bit susceptible to that kind of stodginess that has crept into their game. There's not a lot coming from the bench. Underwhelming at the moment. I still think they'd be okay against Lazio, but right now you wouldn't fancy them to defend their title in the Champions League.
Right, a Lazio team who had to scrape by against Bruges in their final group game to make it to the last 16. I can understand how you'd feel that way, but they're on a good run at the moment. This game will see the two top kind of Golden Boot contenders, certainly the top two in the Golden Boot race from last season, a face-off, Ciro Immobile and Robert Lewandowski. Not sure how they're in the same sentence, but you know they are. Immobile actually pipped Lewandowski to the European Golden Shoe last season. Again, not quite sure how that happened, but James, you can maybe explain. And what do you think? Are Bayern going to be okay against the Laziali?
Well, Lazio are in great form. They've won 8 of 9 games in 2021. The only defeat that they've suffered was against Inter last weekend, when, to be honest, they did actually play very well for the first hour or so. Immobile is in that conversation, I suppose. I mean, he's 3 times top scorer in Serie A. I mean, there aren't many players who've done that. He's done it with two different clubs as well. Torino, that's why he got the move to Dortmund in the first place. He was very good against them in both the games in the Champions League group stage. I mean, very decisive in the first game at the Olimpico, which was the 3-1 win, which really set the tone for their progress through the group, which, let's not forget, was really hampered by COVID-19 tests. You know, are they positive? Are they not? Which is still subject to investigation. And I think one of the things that Lazio have really got going for them is, A, the coach, who is very pragmatic, flexible. He will do what needs to be done in order for them to get a result. They've got one of the best midfields in Serie A. I mean, they've got a better midfield than Juventus, for example. Luis Alberto, Lucas Leiva, Milinkovic. I mean, particularly Luis Alberto is having his best season. It's a mystery why he's not in the Spain squad. It's a mystery why he's not at a bigger club. Because he's consistently either led Serie A in assists. Only Immobile has scored more goals than him for Lazio this season, certainly in 2021. He's had a really good turn of the year. And then you've got Milinkovic, who is like, you know, has often been spoken of as the Ibrahimovic of midfield players, in that, you know, he's this tall, physical guy who, you know, if Bayern press Lazio, Pepe Reina will just ping it onto Milinkovic-Savic's head and he'll knock it down for someone and they'll go on transition. But he's also got the skill, finesse to score from distance, to pick out the final ball. He'll always be at the far post for a mismatch against the fullback or whoever it is. So they've got variation to their attack where they can hurt teams. My concern with them is that, you know, it's Bayern, and you know that might be enough on its own. Right. And they've also got injuries at the back. You know, I mean, they're missing their experienced left-sided centre-back, Stefan Radu, who isn't a big name, but is very important tactically to how they play. Wesley Hutt, when he's been back from Southampton has been pretty disastrous. You know, he gave away the penalty against Inter. He was at fault when they went out of the cup against Atalanta. And they brought in Matteo Musacchio from Milan in January to provide cover because they keep getting injured on the right side of that defence as well. So, you know, all those things bearing in mind. I mean, Lewandowski and Thomas Müller, I mean, I looked at this with the Milan derby in mind because Lautaro and Lukaku have scored 30 goals between them this season, and the only better double act when it comes to scoring goals at any team in Europe's top five leagues is Lewandowski and Thomas Müller. They're the only ones who've scored more. So, you know, I'd expect that back three of Lazio's to come under some significant pressure despite this indifferent form that Bayern have been in.
But Thomas Müller won't be playing.
And also,
don't forget that while Simone Inzaghi could take a lot of players off after an hour in the game against Sampdoria because they were so much in control, Bayern were chasing the game at Frankfurt. They had to, you know, they could not rest players or take them off for the last half hour. And I think physically, like we've seen already so far in this Champions League, the fitness will have a huge impact on a game like this, especially. So, I think Bayern have obviously favourite going into a game like this, but I'm sure Lazio, certainly on the first leg, have a big card to play.
Well, perhaps tenser times than would have been expected when the draw was made for Bayern Munich as they head to Rome a Tuesday night. Before we move on, Rafa, any thoughts on Leipzig's collapse last week against Liverpool?
Did they collapse? I mean, yes, they defended very, very badly and conceded stupid goals, but I don't think they were that bad in the whole game. I think Liverpool made them look pretty impotent by shutting down their attacks. We know that Leipzig have a problem scoring because they don't quite have the same outstanding personnel up front that they have perhaps in other areas. But no, I don't think it was a particularly bad game from Leipzig. I just think people still underestimate Liverpool a little bit because of their recent problems and just somehow thought that Leipzig are going to completely wipe the floor with them, which I don't think was a realistic expectation. If you remember, James, yes, on this very pod, yeah? Yeah, last week, yeah?
Here we go.
Yeah.
You want some?
I said that Liverpool should be seen as favourites.
Right.
And we'll go through, so.
Okay.
You should have known.
Well, indeed. Well, indeed. Next up, two big derbies this weekend.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Sancho, Reus, Brandt auf der linken Seite. Brandt links am Strafraum, noch einmal zurück zu Sancho. Jetzt kommt der Ball auf Haaland. Seitfallzieher, Tor! Was für ein klasse Treffer! Was für ein tolles Tor!
Yep, two big derbies this weekend, that's right. One was in the Ruhr, where Dortmund followed up that Sevilla win with a 4-0 victory over Schalke in that Revier derby. And the other one was at San Siro. Of course, that's coming up in a second. First of all, though, Rafa, we've waxed eloquent about the Haaland goal, which, if you haven't seen it, everybody, sees the massive teen leap into the sky and perfectly execute a kind of flying scissor kick, which, you know, sails into the net. Fantastic. He got a brace, as usual. He's now on 17 goals in 17 Bundesliga games this season, 5 in his last 3 games. Afterwards, he celebrated by actually speaking to the interviewer in the post-game press section. And so did Jadon Sancho, which caused some surprise because he sounded like this.
You know, the recent weeks haven't been so good and we haven't got the results we wanted, but I think we showed the fans in the last two games that we're still fighting and it's not over to the end. And
what have they done to Jadon Sancho in Dortmund, Rafa?
I don't know. I think he was speaking to Norwegian television and maybe he just thought, you know, I'm just going to speak a little bit differently so they can understand me better. It's seems to be one of those unconscious human traits that you want to sound like the person you speak to.
Who are you trying to sound like right now? Is this your real voice or are you just making it easy on us?
My real voice is different. This
okay.
is my broadcast voice.
But is it like Dermot Gallagher, for example, who just knows that the full might of his Irish accent will destroy British eardrums, so professionally has to turn it down? Is that what happens? Jules, for example, do you speak in an entirely different voice? Do you do a kind of simplified version for us?
No, I don't. But remember Joey Barton when he was in Marseille?
As I say, yesterday I make one tackle and all everybody speak about is this tackle. Nobody speaks about the 50-yard pass that kills Balmon and it causes a red card for him.
Obviously he did it once.
Steve McLaren.
I think Steve McLaren. And yep. Steve, of course, Steve did it when
Steve.
He was...
I sort of knew when I came here and Champions League... Liverpool or Arsenal, I thought maybe one of them we would draw, and it is Arsenal, I think.
I was curious.
I reckon Jules is just putting on the whole French shtick. In reality, yeah. He's got like a really strong Welsh accent.
Right. How long has Jadon Sancho been in Dortmund now, Raf?
3 years.
Right, so it could actually have, you know,
not enough to develop a Norwegian accent, I think.
I don't know. But how long did it take? Anyway, this is something we can look into another time. But a great result for Dortmund, less so for Schalke, who remain rooted to the bottom of the Bundesliga despite the arrival of Christian Gross as their manager. Now, almost as emphatic as that 4-0 win was Inter's victory in the Milan derby. James, first of all, loads of attention pre-game on the fact that it was going to be Lukaku and Ibra face-to-face after their fallout in the Coppa Italia quarter-finals. Would it be fair to say that only one of them showed up, though?
No, I don't think it would be fair to say that, because Zlatan could have had a couple of goals at the beginning of the second half. And ultimately, Samir Handanovic... I mean, I don't think he really actually knew all that much about the headers that were coming his way. He just had to get his body there because, you know, he ended up in the back of the net with Ashraf Hakimi. I mean, they were point blank. And, you know, you wonder how the game would have changed had one of those goals gone in because, you know, Milan came out like a team possessed in the second half. And unfortunately for them, Inter then picked them off right at their best moment with a fantastic move. Involving nine players, Eriksen, Perisic involved. I mean, that's been one of the surprises of Inter, certainly since the turn of the year. You know, Eriksen's bags were packed. He was supposed to be on his way out. I mean, the club weren't making any secret of the fact that they would listen to offers for him. Those offers weren't forthcoming. And Conte's sort of been able to reintegrate him into the team in a new role, you know, kind of playing as a number eight in midfield. Conte says, you know, he's had his come to Jesus moment or come to Conte moment insofar as that, he's finally sort of buying into what Conte wants from him. He's fit like he wasn't in the past. And Perisic is another one. Yeah, I mean, Perisic was on loan with treble-winning Bayern this time last season because Conte didn't believe that he could reinvent himself either as a second striker, as a wing-back. He's played really well as a wing-back in the last few weeks. Was probably their best player, particularly first half against Milan. And, you know, all these things have come together for Inter. But then again, it maybe shouldn't be all that much of a surprise given the amount that they've invested in the team and given the current state of play, which is, as I mentioned at the top of the show, they're able to rest and recuperate for a week between games, whereas their rivals can't. And yeah, it's been a very good 6 weeks, I would say, for Inter. You know, they're beating Juventus, they're beating Lazio, they're beating Milan. Okay, they've gone out the Coppa Italia, but I think the trophy that really matters to them, apart from the Champions League, is to be champions of Italy again. And they look poised to do that. I know it's early to say that, but I think with Lukaku and Lautaro in this kind of form, Lukaku, has kind of proclaimed himself to be in the top five strikers in the world. You watch his last two performances against Lazio and Milan, big games in Italy, and it's kind of hard to dispute that, really. I mean, the way he is dominating games and being able to score goals from, runs from inside his own half, just not afraid to take on defenders, see a weakness, pick on it, take advantage of it. I mean, does it time and again, but yeah, I mean, he set up the first goal with a really smart cross. He's just a complete striker at the moment.
Mm, scored the third one to make it four straight Milan derbies that he's found the net in.
Yeah, I wonder how much of I am going to prove you wrong there is in Lukaku, because in the past I read interviews to the guy, and he was saying that he always wanted to prove the doubters wrong, even when he was a child. And at Manchester United, he didn't live the best possible way. So I don't know how much of self-vindication there is in Lukaku, because I believe that he's playing like in a mission to prove that he's one of the best strikers. It's like he wants to vindicate himself all the time, and he did it in front of Ibra when he scored his goal. He was shouting in one of the corners, what was that, Dio, Dio, to Ibra the other day?
He was shouting in the Ibra's direction, it looked like. But from the lip read that I saw on DAZN, which was showing it in Italy.
But you can hear him on you can actually hear it. Unfortunately, the commentators talk over most of it, but you can hear him going, Dio, Dio, which seems to be a reference to Ibra's comment that Milan doesn't have a king, but it does have a god. I am that.
Yeah. But I mean, I think listening to the on-field mics without Com speaking, that was on Italian TV, it seemed that he was saying, give me the ball straight away. Give me the ball, and this is what I can do you to one of his teammates.
Oh, right. Okay, so you don't think he was calling out Ibra?
No, I don't actually. I think maybe he initially was, but certainly the way the final comment seems, if you give me the ball like that, I will do this with it, you.
I prefer the version where he was, but
with his hands, he shows the ground and then he shows, almost like said, "This is mine. This is my turf." And that's where I thought the dig to Ibra was. He was almost looking at Ibra, saying, "This is my place. This is my home."
Right.
And you could see with his fingers pointing down and pointing to his chest. And I thought maybe that's when he was trolling him a bit.
Right. Well, so San Siro belongs to Lukaku, but San Remo belongs to Zlatan, because Milan, while they lose the lead in Serie A, now have their main goal threat heading off to host or share the hosting duties at the world's most bourgeois music festival.
This is a crazy festival story.
The Canzone di San Remo, which is the I didn't realize this, is kind of the progenitor of the Eurovision Song Contest. It was the model that Eurovision was actually built on and remains, I think, the competition which furnishes Italy's entrance for Eurovision. But it's an extraordinary, if you've never seen it, first of all, don't. But what you would see if you do is this just kind of time capsule from, I don't know, from like Saturday night TV in the 1970s of extraordinary, and loads of really, really cheesy songs.
I think it keeps real songwriting alive, James.
Right.
And whether that songwriting is good or not, I mean, we are all the judges. I believe Rafa was a big fan of, I think, was it last year's winner or certainly the year before, which was Soldi by Mahmoud. No, that is a great track. There's no disputing.
Rafa covered it when he was a music writer.
Did you go to Sanremo, Rafa?
But
no.
In your Def Jam sweatshirt? No, okay. But,
yeah, James, I mean, you are right. He is co-hosting this with Amadeus, an Inter fan. I remember being at the Milan Derby last February, and Amadeus sort of came up, walked into the VIP section with his blue and black custom-made jacket on. Ibra signed this contract with Rai, the state broadcaster, before signing his contract extension with Milan at the end of last season, because he didn't know what was going to happen. And so he's committed to essentially appear every night at the San Remo Music Festival. Whether he will do some of it via Zoom or not, right? Because let's not forget, Milan have a game, James, midweek in Serie A, whilst this is all going on. So, you know, I think what we'll see is Zlatan maybe occasionally appearing on Zoom, but he's not going to do the pendolino, as they say, go up and down the Riviera, train at Milanello, and then basically go back to be on stage. I think he'll be at a hotel in Sanremo, and then maybe training on the beach a little bit like a little bit like Rocky. That'd be fantastic. And he's going to do a duet with his good friend Sinisa Mihailovic, James. So, you know, the week after when we have this podcast, I'm sure we'll find some of the audio of that to play, because, you know, it's going to be one of the television events of 2021.
Right. I remember Edmundo hightailing it to go to the Rio Carnival, but that was the Rio Carnival, not San Remo Music Festival. I know he'd signed this contract, but it just seems bizarre that he will effectively, at this most delicate point for Milan and their title race, head off to the Riviera. Thursday night, they've got a big game against Retal Belgrade in Milan. 2-2 from the first leg. Belgrade down to 10 men in the final minutes, but still finding an equaliser. One of these series of disappointing results for Milan, who you will recall were beaten by Spezia last week. What are your thoughts on their chances of sorting that one out?
Well, Europa League is another route to the Champions League if they win it. I think they did state it as an objective on the eve of the season. Their participation, I think, in it is one of the explanations for them fading at the moment, because Pioli said after the derby that they started the season earlier than everybody else. They played six games before everybody else did because they were in the preliminaries. Okay, they were playing Shamrock Rovers, Rio Ave, and Bodo Glimt, but that's still six games where they weren't resting, recovering, and whatever. And then in sort of November, December time, suffered a lot of injuries, COVID absences, and that meant some of the guys who are kind of their not fringe players played more than they otherwise would have. They're tired now, and the players who are coming back from injury, they're not 100%. And I think the other thing to bear in mind with Milan is that their January transfer window, you know, aside from Tomori, who in my opinion should be starting instead of their captain, Alessio Romagnoli, who's had a disastrous couple of games for them against Spezia and Inter, Mandzukic hasn't played in a year. How can you expect him to be ready to play and make an impact now? I think, you know, he's going to take another few weeks to be fit and ready. And Mete is just not good enough for Milan. You know, I think unfortunately Benacer's had a relapse of the injury that he suffered. He's such a big player for him because Tonali has been a major disappointment. I think it's Benacer and Kessié in midfield, and they're really, really good. And I think without them, Milan kind of kept things ticking along for a while, but I think now that's really caught up with them. So yeah, I think they really have to pick this up. It's not only the game against Red Star on Thursday, James, Roma are coming up next. And all of a sudden, the race, not for the title, but certainly for a place in the top four, is really, really hotting up. It's really tight.
Wow. How quickly things change in football. Very shortly, we'll look at one or two of the other Europa League second legs coming up this Thursday, and then catching up with the latest on Paris Saint-Germain and that Ligue 1 title race.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Some very entertaining games last Thursday, particularly that Rangers game away at Antwerp, and the similarly kind of to and fro Young Boys Leverkusen clash. Which games are you going to be looking out for as the fixtures reverse this Thursday, Rafa?
Yeah, well, the Leverkusen Young Boys one will be brilliant for all sorts of reasons. But Leverkusen, I mean, if there was ever a game that kind of sums them up, then that was it. They just did not show up at all for the first 45 minutes. They were 3-0 down. They came back really strong, 3-3. Then they switch off again, 4-3 to Young Boys. And interesting subplot to this as well, because Gerardo Suone, the Young Boys manager, is in the running for being perhaps the Borussia Mönchengladbach manager when Rosa moves across to the other Borussia in the summer, and a strong show against Leverkusen would do his credential no damage at all. So that should be good. But also a fantastic game was Lille against Ajax. Totally bonkers last 20 minutes or so. That should be really fun as well.
Yeah, with Mr. Brobby scoring the winner, who will not be signing a contract extension and will be leaving in the summer. One of the hottest talents in Dutch football. So some disappointment at Ajax about that.
2-1, was it? That finished? You had some crazy scorelines. Hoffenheim-Mulder, that went to 3-3. Norwegians who hadn't played a competitive game since Christmas coming back from 3-1 down. As mentioned, you had the Rangers come back. They'll be talking more about the second leg in the Totally Scottish Football Show as well. Arsenal-Benfica finished 1-1 in Rome. Second leg will be in Piraeus. And Napoli against Granada after losing 2-0 away in that one. You mentioned, James, the way that the wheels have very much come off Napoli under Gattuso. And you credit Granada for their 2-0 win. But it does seem like this time, all the different stories about Gattuso not being long for the job, etc., maybe catching up with the side. Or is there something else going on?
Well, I think the situation between Gattuso and Napoli broke down when he discovered that they were sounding out other candidates to replace him because he hadn't signed a contract extension. And the results have deteriorated really since then. Certainly the number of injuries that Napoli have got at the moment really piling up. I mean, Osimhen, their 70 million record signing, has been back, and he got injured badly in the weekend, was in hospital in Bergamo afterwards, has been discharged, was discharged on
Monday.
They
discharged Osimhen. Yeah. Semen discharge.
Yep. So he won't be playing. I think it'll be a surprise if he's playing on Thursday, which will be great for Granada. This deficit is too big for them to overturn. I mean, they've missed Mertens as well since he twisted his ankle against Inter before Christmas. He's tried to come back, but hasn't really been able to come back on a consistent basis. Yeah, I mean, if you look at their attack in the 4-2 defeat to Atalanta, it was Elmas, Zielinski, and Politano behind Osimhen. So Politano's been in great form. He was the guy who put the ball over the top for Zielinski's goal, but I think Napoli in critical condition right now, and Granada are poised to take advantage.
Crikey, Granada in their first season, Alvaro, in Europe, and they and Villarreal were the only one of the five Spanish sides to actually win last week.
Yes, this was quite an impact in Spain. I mean, I haven't said much about it, but the week was very bad for the Spanish teams. And Haaland and Mbappé, they left the print in Spain, definitely. I mean, I can barely remember two players living or having an impact like this in Spanish football since maybe Henry, when he scored the beautiful goal against Real Madrid at Bernabeu. Or you have to think about Ajax, when they destroyed Real Madrid in 1995 at Bernabeu, and nobody could believe how good they were playing. So Spanish football suffered, and Granada was one of those teams that played really professionally against Napoli, but I wouldn't write off Napoli at all. I mean, Granada has conceded 41 goals this season. They are the worst defense in La Liga. They lost against Huesca this weekend, and Huesca, believe me, normally they don't score 3 goals even in friendlies, and they scored 3 goals against Granada. And they got so many players out as well. Soldado and Luis Milla, they are two very important players up front, and they won't be playing against Napoli. I still believe that Napoli has a chance of coming back. Of course, let's see if Osimhen can play, because he can be important up front. He's got a lot of physicality. And I do believe that Granada, all things considered, I mean, if they go through in this knockout round, I mean, they should be out soon. I mean, because this season they are not as good defensively as they were. But I have to say something positive about them, definitely. I mean, I thought that Europa League football was going to be too much for them, and instead of that, they have managed to go through in a group with PSV Eindhoven, and who was the other team? PAOK Thessaloniki as well. So European football,
your
instead
team
of Yeah, my second team, at least. I don't have a choice, James. Let's put it this way. Sometimes European football brings some complexes to you. And that's happening to Barcelona too. Every time they go to Europe, it's like the team feels inferior to the top teams in European football. For Granada, it's been the opposite. European football has had a very nice effect on them. They're invigorating. Because they have realized they can compete against anybody, even at the European stage. But again, playing against Napoli this time is going to be really tough because, as I said, defensively, right now, they are missing something.
Wow. So we could have a scenario where after this round of games, there's only Villarreal, Unai Emery's Villarreal, left in Europe for Spanish sides in the Champions League and Europa League. Extraordinary. All right, well, let's move on. Looking forward to seeing what happens in those second legs Thursday night. Next up, we'll wrap things up with, amongst other things, the big news from France.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Jules, Tuesday you were on a high. Sunday night, wham. Brought you back down. Boom. Losing at home 2-0 to Monaco, Paris Saint-Germain I'm talking about. Monaco now do the double over the Parisians, the first Ligue 1 team to win both fixtures against them since Nancy almost 10 years ago. Crikey. Yeah. The Soccer Football Forum says, really impressed with Monaco's play against Paris Saint-Germain on Sunday. Have they left it too late, the Monégasques? Or are they legitimate contenders for the title along with Lyon, Lille and Paris Saint-Germain?
They're 6 points behind Lille, but I still think 6 points is nothing considering how the season is going. What's a shame is that they dropped some silly points against smaller teams, games they should have won, against Lorient, for example, very recently. But they've been pretty good in some of the biggest games, if you want, especially against the two against PSG, especially this one on Sunday night, which is not the case for PSG. If you look at PSG in this title race, they only drew 0-0 at Lille. They lost at home to Lyon, and now they lost twice against Monaco. So they've only won one point out of 12 against the other teams that are in the title race against them, which is not enough. Pochettino, in 9 league games, have only taken 19 points, which is the worst of any first 9 games for any managers in the Qatari era. So,
do you want him out, Jules?
I'll keep him for a little bit until he qualifies us against Barcelona, and then he can go if you want. No, I'm kidding. No, I mean, I can see why it should be difficult in the league, and especially in a game like this when you've been such on a high on Tuesday, you don't play Verratti, who is arguably your most important player when Neymar isn't there, because he's the only one who can create something. The others,
why
no
didn't
one
he play for
anything.
Tiredness or what?
Yeah, he had a little injury, the Pochettino said after the game. That's why he only started him on the bench, and then he came on when the panic started to creep in on like, uh-oh, we're going to lose this one again. Because it's 6 defeats already in the league. That's more than, you know, any time in the Qatari era as well. So they're only 4 points behind Lille, so there's plenty of points still to win. And as we've been saying every week, you still will have a PSG Lille, you'll have a Lyon PSG, Lyon Lille. Monaco will also play Lille and Lyon, so there's a lot of teams who can drop points and win games, etc. But it was very difficult, and it's a lot down to how Monaco and Niko Kovac approached that game, prepared. The 4-5-1 formation worked so well. They put Disasi, who's usually a centre-back, but who's really quick as a right-back, just to man-mark Kylian Mbappe, and he did a great job. They used to play against each other when they were kids, because Disasi is also from the north of Paris, like Mbappe. And it was a great performance from him. Paris born and bred, indeed. And then it worked really well for Monaco. And I agree with the listener who sent the question. It's such a shame that Monaco lost a few points there and there in games that they should have won.
Okay, well, as it stands, Lille are top after their 4-1 win against Lorient. 3 points behind them are Lyon, who were 3-2 winners at Brest. Then you got Paris Saint-Germain with Monaco 2 points behind them. Interesting question about how Pochettino kind of puts his priorities going forward, because you're well placed to go through in the Champions League. Total Ramdata saying, does Pochettino rotate for the league and focus on the Champions League if they continue to advance? Or is Paris Saint-Germain actually at risk of not even making the Champions League places as it stands?
Yeah, there's a chance, because there's only 3 out of those 4 who will qualify for the Champions League next season. I think he thinks that they are good enough, and Neymar will come back in 2 weeks probably, and Di Maria is going to come back next week. So they're good enough to to finish the job against Barcelona and then see whoever they draw for the quarterfinals if they get there. But still win the league as well in the meantime, because as we said, 4 points, you could come back. So that's only the idea now. And Pochettino is certainly not giving up on the title, because even if he only arrived in January, it wouldn't be a good look for him at all if they were not winning the title this season. You know, you can say, oh yeah, but Tuchel lost 4 games before I arrived, but that wouldn't be good enough. You know, this is expected that they will win the title. So there's still a lot of work for him to do, and certainly he will have to do a better job than Sunday. What gets me about Sunday is that any of us who were watching the game on television could see that the five in midfield from Monaco were too strong for PSG, and yet Pochettino didn't do anything to change. He left Paredes, Herrera and Ganagay running around basically because they were bringing nothing to the game, and I was a bit disappointed by his game management that I thought was really poor.
Jules, I wonder how the French press reacted to Messi's poor game against PSG. Was there anything like, what does PSG need Messi for or something like that in the press?
Not really. We were more drawn by the comments that Kylian Mbappe had after the game and saying how those games make him happier. And we've learned since then that the discussions are going quite well between PSG and the Mbappe clan. So, because let's not forget that the priority for PSG is to keep Mbappe and give him a new deal. If he signs a new deal, I think they will try maybe to get Messi, but there will be a lot of conditions for Messi to come. And the biggest one is him to take a huge pay cut if Kylian Mbappe stays in Paris with Neymar. Right. So I think if Mbappe stays, it's much less likely that Messi can come to Paris than if Mbappe decides not to extend the deal and then you need to find a kind of replacement. And in that case, Messi could come and Mbappe could leave. But no, not too much. I think we focus more on how bad...
PSG not talking about Messi?
We haven't been in contact. I don't know what you're talking about.
So disrespectful.
I don't know what you're talking
disrespect
about.
Disrespect not talking about him
what,
for once.
What about disrespectfully talking about Harry Kane, Jules? Is he going to go to Paris?
So you believe the Sunday Mirror now?
I don't. I'm asking you.
The Sunday Mirror?
I believe you, Jules.
So the Sunday Mirror says that Harry Kane would... If Pochettino wants to work again with Harry Kane, I'm sure he would want to if he has the opportunity. Mm. But that certainly hasn't been discussed at the club as well.
Okay. All right. That's all it is.
But that would be excellent. Great.
Will it? I mean, for Harry, it would be
I think
lovely.
For PSG, for Kane, if Mbappe was to go at some point, I think you could do worse by replacing him with Harry Kane.
Marseille had a 1-1 draw against Nantes. They have now reportedly agreed terms with Jorge Sampaoli to take over as their manager, leaving Atletico Mineiro. He got himself sent off in his final game, which is nice.
He went mad.
Yeah, he went mad when
Recife scored the 2-2. Yeah, completely mad. The original man in black as well. He was dressed in black again. Mm. I wonder if he'll be the same in Marseille. But certainly there's two things here. One, I think... He could arrive on Friday, by the way, and on Sunday they play the Olympico against Lyon, which even without fans is a special game. So that could be interesting. One, I think he's the perfect fit into this, how mad the city is about their football team. And I think the whole passion and obviously Bielsa and all of that could work really well for Sampaoli. The problem is right now, I'm not sure he's got the players to play his style of football. So I don't know what kind of football we're going to get, but it'd be very interesting. And certainly it's a good thing for Ligue 1 as someone like him joins the league and joins a club like Marseille who needs someone like him.
Let's don't forget that Sampaoli is an excellent manager, and at Sevilla, at the end, he didn't end up well because he, as far as I can remember, he accepted an offer from the Argentinian Federation to be the manager, the coach of Argentina. But he had Sevilla leader back in October 2016, and that Sevilla beat Manchester United at Old Trafford too. So that was a very, very, very good Sevilla, actually, with Ben Yedder, and some other very special players like Samir Nasri, he got the best of the Frenchman as well. So yeah, Sampaoli is a fully qualified manager, and he did great at Sevilla until Argentina called him.
Well, we could be talking about his debut performance with Olympique Marseille in next week's show. We shall see. Amid all the excitement, almost forgot to preview one of this midweek's Champions League games, and that is, of course, Wednesday's Borussia Mönchengladbach Man City clash. City's 19th straight win, or could Marco Rose's side spring a whopping surprise?
I think it might be a game to forget for Borussia Mönchengladbach. They don't seem to be right now in the right state of mind or fitness or shape. performance-wise, to live with the way that City are playing. I think it could get quite ugly. They lost at home to Mainz. They once again looked bad at the back. They had very little going forward. Lars Stindl scored, but there was nothing from Thuram. There was nothing from, you know, the big players that they have up front. It was just not good, and it's been like that for the last few weeks. A lot of people are blaming the announcement that Rose will go for those problems, but in truth, Gladbach hasn't been playing well throughout this calendar year. So unless something dramatic happens and we see a huge improvement and we see them play as well as they did against Real Madrid and Inter in the group stage and against Shakhtar, then I can only see one winner, and I think it could get quite ugly.
Oh, this is the first time they've been in the knockout stages of the Champions League, although back in the old days of the European Cup, they got to the final in 77. They're unlikely to make the competition unless they win this one for next season, because they're lying down in eighth, 9 points off the top four in the Bundesliga. Crikey. All right. Well, that was short, wasn't it?
Short and sweet.
Man City are the favourites, by contrast, to win the Champions League, even though they've never been past the quarterfinals under Pep. Well, we'll get further indications about their potentiality of finally taking this trophy, of course, on Wednesday. That, though, I think brings us to the end of today's Totally Football Show European edition. Unless there's anything else you wanted to treat the listener to, Alvaro, Jules, Rafa, or James?
Did you see this story in Switzerland?
What story is that, Jules?
More with the dog. Yeah, the dog. That's a great story.
What story is that?
Games behind closed doors. And yeah, it was Zurich against... Hang on, let me...
It was Zurich against Sion.
Ah, oh, yeah, against Sion.
Right. And what happened then? What was the dog?
So the Zurich owner and president was in the stands, obviously, watching the game with his dog. Mm. And the dog escaped and went onto the pitch and stopped the game. And the owner had to run down on the pitch from the stands to grab the dog on the pitch so the game could restart.
Brilliant.
So Cookie. Dogs. Cookie is the name of the dog. So well done,
no,
Cookie.
Chilla.
Right. Well, more on the breaking story.
I read Cookie.
Anyway.
Discrepancy here.
It's definitely Chilla.
Yeah. This is not okay. Alvaro and James and Jules and Rafa.
Cookie. I think it's Cookie.
Right. No, do you accept Chilla. Cookie, Rafa, or not?
No, I don't.
I'm reading Cookie on L'Equipe website. Ancelo Canepa is the owner of Zurich.
Yes.
Producer Charlie, if you could just fade them out. And I'll say goodbye to everybody. We're going to be back with Thursday's Totally Football Show, in which we'll be reviewing which midweek games have already happened by that point. And then next Tuesday, of course, the boys will be back together to bring you all the latest from the wonderful world of the continental game. For now, many, many thanks for being with us to Alvaro, James, Julian and Rafa. And you, especially listener, hope you have a great week and we'll catch up with you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.